The last case of the morning is number 02-2062, Joseph Vlasek against the United States Trustee. Mr. Grossman.
May it please the court, my name is Richard Grossman and I'm representing Joseph Vlasek, the debtor in this case. We come here today to ask the court to recognize that a mentally disabled person should have a better chance than he had in the court below.
I ask you, Mr. Grossman, to keep your voice up a little bit. That just records and doesn't really amplify very well.
Okay. I'll repeat. We ask you to, we say that a mentally disabled debtor should have a better chance than he had below. It's undisputed, I think, on the record that Mr. Vlasek was mentally disabled. There are orders from the Cook County Probate Court which find that he is mentally deficient. His mother was appointed as the representative for his estate, not his person. The law of Illinois draws a very sharp distinction between the two forms of guardianship, and the bankruptcy law, the substantive law of bankruptcy, relies in turn on the state law.
So what are those two varieties of guardianship in the state of Illinois?
There's a guardianship of the person and a guardianship of the estate. And as I point out in the brief, the Supreme Court of Illinois has stated that there's a section that grants certain powers to each type of guardianship. They say nothing in this particular section regarding the powers of the guardian of the person grants the guardian standing to maintain or defend any legal proceeding. In other words, you can't just go into court and file a claim on behalf of a person or even defend that person, as I understand the law, just because of that particular form of guardianship. In other words, there's also a form known as plenary guardianship where you have the authority to deal with not only the person's assets, management of property affairs and so forth, but the very identity almost. You could file divorces or some make decisions about medical treatment and so forth. But in this case, they did not have that authority.
I have it in front of me here, the order entered by the probate division of the circuit court on 19 February 1997. And it says here, the court finds that no less restrictive alternative than plenary guardian is necessary to adequately protect the ward at this time. That sounds like they were covering the whole gamut.
I don't have the record in front of me, but I'll tell you that the order that appoints, I believe, is circled guardian. I'd have to look at it. And I apologize. I didn't bring the record up here with me, but I think if you look, you see that the order only relates to one facet, not plenary. I'll let counsel address that. I don't have a copy of it. I'm pretty sure. I mean, but be that as it may, we also argue, so just to conclude, that portion of it, assuming that I'm correct and that there wasn't the plenary guardianship and that the state law that governs this does not permit the filing that was done, and bankruptcy law relies on state law to determine the substantive rights here, it's fairly clear, I think, that this case should have been dismissed because the law simply did not permit the filing that was done. Moreover, on a due process basis, it's arguable that the court should have been more solicitous on behalf of this debtor. You know, his mother was not, did not have identical interests with the debtor. Indeed, there's evidence in the record that the mother took this property and did things with it irrespective of my client's interests. And it was pretty obvious to everybody involved that that's what the case was. The best evidence of just how bad this was for the debtor was that he lost all this property. No person who had the debtor's interests in mind would have done what this person did. They submitted the properties that were lost were purchased with a personal injury settlement. They were paid for so that the properties all had loss of equity and no debt. To file a Chapter 7 in such circumstances is just, I mean, certainly for a lawyer would be malpractice. And for a private person to do it on behalf of another person is just, I think it's unconscionable to allow it to take effect in this case, to deprive the debtor of virtually his entire award that he got from the Circuit Court of Cook County. Finally, the law is fairly clear that a bankruptcy petition filed by someone other than the debtor has long been held to be a nullity. And there's very, very few cases. I can only find one where the debtor was allowed to ratify the filing after the fact. But in that case, a competent person had executed a power of attorney. This is not that case. This case is a situation where someone who literally had no authority and whose interests were not identical with the debtor was allowed to file a bankruptcy petition on behalf of that person, and it was absolutely disastrous. As a matter of due process, a person is entitled to have a notice and a hearing before his property is taken away. This person's property was exposed to the claims of creditors without any kind of you can ask counsel, the service that was made in this case was not on my client, was on his mother. Had a person who was actually looking out for my client's interests been able to assert my client's interests in this case, I think this surely would have taken another course. This would not have come out this way. Indeed, there's evidence in the record to suggest that my client's mother was rifling this estate for its assets. And it's just, as a matter of due process and a matter of substantive bankruptcy law, we just don't think it should be allowed. We'd ask
thank you,
you
Mr.
to.
Grossman.
Thank you. I reserve the balance of the time for rebuttal.
Hear it out from Mr. Rapke.
Please, the court. The threshold issue in this case is whether the court has jurisdiction in the first instance over this appeal. And the second issue is whether the bankruptcy court abused its discretion when it refused to, when it denied the debtor's motion to dismiss his bankruptcy case. Addressing the second issue, the debtor filed his bankruptcy case on August 27 of 1996. About 6 months later, Mrs. Vlasic was appointed as the guardian of his person, honorary guardian of his person. Rule 1016 of the Federal Rules of Bankruptcy Procedure.
Is it your understanding that she had authority at that point, at least after being appointed on February 19, 1997, over his assets as well as his physical well-being?
My understanding of Illinois law is that guardianship is divided into a guardian of the person, where you make decisions concerning his financial or his healthcare, well-being, where he goes to school, medical decisions. There's also a guardian of the estate, which addresses financial issues. That can be limited, or it can be plenary. The state court, with Mr. Vlasic's consent, entered an order appointing Mrs. Vlasic as the plenary guardian.
Meaning
person.
That she had authority both with respect to decisions regarding his person and with respect to his financial affairs?
When the court uses plenary, I believe that that's correct, Your Honor, under the circumstances of the case and given the finding that was made.
Was the petition was filed a petition to have the court declare the mother to be the guardian of the person and the estate?
I don't think it would have been possible to do that, Your Honor.
Oh, yeah, it's possible to do that.
But not after the bankruptcy case is filed.
No, not after the bankruptcy case is filed. But I'm not sure about that either, because you're not proceeding against anybody. You're asking for whatever estate he might have or might be left after the thing be available to him. What I want to know is what did the petition request in the probate court of Cook County?
I do not have the petition, Your Honor. I only have the
report. I think you're pausing the threshold of a brilliant discovery. How about getting a copy of the petition for us?
You can do that, Your Honor, but...
Well, would you do that?
I would be happy to do that, Your Honor. With all due respect, after the bankruptcy case is filed, any property that debtor owns...
I understand that. I just want to know what happened in the probate level, what it was asked for, and what was delivered. I read the order as Judge Ripple has described it. With pleadery, but I want to know what was asked for and what was described.
I'll be happy to forward that to Your Honor.
Good. Now, there's a findings of fact entered in the bankruptcy court saying that it was for the person. Is that correct?
Correct.
But that doesn't give any citation. It just says that on February 97, Circuit Court of Cook County, Illinois, County Department, Probate Division, entered an order appointing Patricia Vlasic as plenary guardian of the person of Joseph Vlasic, a disabled person. You know where the district or the bankruptcy judge may have gotten that information?
It's in the order and it's part of the record, Your Honor.
Well, Judge Ripple just read the order and doesn't say anything about, it says plenary, but it doesn't say anything about the person.
It says on the verified petition of, and I have it, I have a copy of it in front of me, Your Honor. On the verified petition of Patricia Vlasic, an adjudication of disability and the appointment of a guardian for the person of the above-named disabled person. The court, having heard the evidence, finds that the respondent is a disabled person.
That's
it's only for the person, then.
That's right. That's right. Rule 1016 of the Federal Rules of Bankruptcy Procedure provides that if a debtor becomes incompetent after the bankruptcy case is filed, then the Chapter 7 liquidation proceeding continues as if the incapacity had not occurred. And that's what happened in this case, Your Honor. There's nothing in the record that suggests that the debtor was incompetent on August 27, 1996, when the bankruptcy case was filed. The debtor didn't introduce any evidence that suggests that he was incompetent on August 27 of 1996, the petition date. The only evidence that was in the record was submitted by the trustee. He submitted the doctor's appointment that showed that the debtor was in good health when he received the proceeds of a settlement. He introduced testimony that the debtor owned and operated two businesses. He bought and sold real estate. He fathered a child. He attended his 341 meeting before the trustee. He admitted to preparing his bankruptcy schedules with the assistance of his mother. Suggestion that he lost property because of the bankruptcy filing isn't accurate, Your Honor. When it became apparent that there was going to be a paternity action, the properties that Mr. Vlasic purchased, he conveyed those out of his name in order to insulate them from creditors. Even so, it was within the bankruptcy court's discretion to either grant or deny the motion to dismiss the bankruptcy case. But that wasn't filed until over 2 years after the bankruptcy case had initially been filed. The debtor appeared at a December 1998 hearing and claimed to be mentally incompetent. The bankruptcy court proceeded carefully, Your Honors. invited the public guardian's office to participate in the proceedings. Arrangements were made for the debtor to be examined by a psychiatrist. When he refused to do that, the court ordered him to appear before the psychiatrist.
Which court?
The bankruptcy court ordered the debtor to appear for that examination. And he also ordered the psychiatrist that was going to be examining him to report his findings concerning the debtor's competency as of August 27 of 1996, the petition date. The debtor ignored all those orders. On behalf of the trustee, we went before the bankruptcy court to have him held in contempt of court. He still refused to abide by the bankruptcy court's orders on this issue that he's claiming is the principal issue in this case. What else was the bankruptcy court to do? The record also shows that this bankruptcy case was filed a week after a $77,000 child support judgment was entered in the paternity case. And by the time the debtor filed his motion to dismiss, he'd already received his discharge. He had retained lawyers shortly after the bankruptcy, after the 341 meeting. He retained lawyers to go into the state court, assert his bankruptcy, and quash body attachment orders, which he was successful in doing. He was able to stop the state's attorney's collection efforts, and he was able to force the state's attorney into the bankruptcy court pursuant to the state court order to look to the bankruptcy estate to recover on its claim.
Did they recover?
There was a partial distribution made to the principal claimant in this case, who was the woman with the child support judgment.
Yeah.
She received, I believe, $26,000 or thereabouts, Your Honor.
Which was $26,000 more she would have gotten any other way. Yeah.
Well, that's true, especially given the tactics that have been involved in both cases, in state court and into the bankruptcy court. What we were put through in this case is amazing. Based on this record, it can't possibly be said that the bankruptcy court abused its discretion in refusing to dismiss the bankruptcy case. And also based on this record, the debtor is clearly estopped from asserting that he didn't sign his bankruptcy petition. He accepted the benefits of this bankruptcy filing for over 2 years before he claimed for the first time that he didn't sign the bankruptcy petition. If that were the case, and if this bankruptcy were filed without his authority or knowledge, his lawyers wouldn't have gone into the state court in the first instance and used the bankruptcy to quash the body attachment orders, and he should have brought that to the trustee's attention. In fact, he had a duty to bring it to the trustee's attention at his 341 meeting. He didn't do that. What Mr. Grossman said is incorrect about these properties being free and clear. They were all mortgaged. The record shows that this debtor made a conscious decision first to file a bankruptcy case to avoid the creditors, and second, as the case proceeded, to keep himself out of jail. There was no downside to this, Your Honor. The property was already mortgaged. All the properties were in foreclosure. He was going to lose the property anyway.
Mr. Reitke, I'll have to ask you to terminate at this time.
Thank you.
Time has expired. Thank you. Does Mr. Grossman have any time?
2 minutes.
Thank you.
Your Honors, let me go over this again. The order, I believe, counsel had a copy of it, says the state of the person. The case that I cite, which is an Illinois Supreme Court case, is really emphatic about the fact that the person, guardian of the person, does not have any standing to do anything for the person in a court of law. I mean, it's there, it's plain, it's black and white, you know, law. They want to have it both ways. They say, well, you know, he might not have been incompetent, you know, that's fine. They served everything on his mother. They dealt with his mother. The entire process was channeled through his mother. Either he's incompetent, in which case I insist that the substance of law here does not permit this filing, or B, he's not incompetent, in which case he was entitled to due process. He was entitled to be served. He was entitled to his own lawyer. He was entitled to do everything. He'd say, you know, well, he did this and he did that. He did. His mother did all of this. The record is full of the of documentation where his mother, they brought a claim at one point because his mother had to put these properties into a trust the day before she filed the bankruptcy. So they filed a motion to void out the transfers because obviously it's a fraud on the court. She puts it into a trust and then the next day files a bankruptcy. Well, it's absurd. I mean, that he didn't do any of this, and she signed every single one of those deeds, and they know it. And the record, I think, reflects that because she testified about it. I think she testified about it at the hearing that the bankruptcy court held. So they can't have it both ways. Either he's incompetent, and they say there's no evidence of his incompetency. One wonders how it is that an order gets held, an order gets entered in the probate court where the judge says no less than, you know, plenary over his person, and all of a sudden, somehow, a couple years later, he's supposed to be, you know, competent enough to do all the things that counsel suggests that he was doing. He wasn't. His mother filed this bankruptcy. His mother filed this bankruptcy because he fathered a child. I think that the record is, the historic record is pretty clear that that doesn't necessarily implicate competency. The ability to father a child is not necessarily any hallmark of that. And okay. In any event, I would ask the court to void out this bankruptcy.
Thank you, Mr. Grossman. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.